Well, on Sunday evenings, we've been looking at the passion of Christ as told by John, an eyewitness to these things. And tonight we've come to Doubting Thomas. So please come with me to the reading which we had, and particularly chapter 20 and verses 24 to 31. John says, "Now Thomas, called the twin, one of the 12, was not with them when Jesus came. The other disciples therefore said to him, 'We have seen the Lord.' He said to them, 'Unless I see in his hands the print of the nails and put my finger into the print of the nails and put my hand into his side, I will not believe.'" Three things this evening. The first is this: Doubting Thomas. So what do we know about Thomas? Well, he's one of the 12, one of Jesus' inner circle. And he's also a twin. Some translations will have to say Didymus. That just means he's a twin. And when you look at Thomas, we've got little vignettes, little pictures of what he's like. It's very difficult not to like Thomas, because we've all met his like. We all know his type. And I know someone will probably tell me off of this afterwards, but if he was an Englishman, I think Thomas would be a Yorkshireman. John chapter 11, Jesus going to Bethany. Jesus is now a marked man. It's potentially very dangerous. And it's Thomas who says to them all, he says, "Well, we might as well go with him, if only to die with him." And actually says, "Let us also go that we may die with him." Is Thomas looking on the bright side of life? He's not, is he? He's sort of dour and dogged, and the glass is half empty. "Come on, lads, you might as well make the best of it. We've got a miserable situation. Well, let's do what we can." Who said it was a miserable situation? I remember someone saying that you can always tell a Yorkshireman because the sides of his mouth are turned down. And my grandfather, who was born in Yorkshire, when he heard that, he shook his head and said, "No." And then as I looked at him, as he said, the sides of his mouth were turned down. And you can see Thomas, can't you? I saw the sides of his mouth turned down. "Come on, we might as well make the best of it. We might as well go with him, if only to die with him." And then you have in John 14, Thomas appears again. Now Jesus gives this wonderful teaching. John 14, he says, "In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, you may be also." Wonderful, isn't it? "And where I go, you know, and the way you know." Wonderful. And then Thomas punctures it. Plain speaking, Thomas. Thomas, the man who tells it how it is. And Thomas effectively says, "Lord, I don't know what you're talking about." You get the sense that Thomas is saying, "Well, you need to be practical about this." And he says, "Lord, we don't know where you're going, and how can we know the way?" So you get the feel of who this man is. There's something dour about him, dogged about him. He's a sort of Yorkshireman, plain speaking, no nonsense, a bluff speaking man, a blunt speaking man, a bit of a stoic, tells it how it is. "Come on, we need to be practical about this. I've no idea what you're talking about, Lord. It doesn't make any sense to me." So, of course, it would be Thomas of all people who wasn't there on that first Sunday. And, of course, it's Thomas of all people who would say, very earthy, "Unless I see in his hands the print of the nails and put my finger into the print of the nails and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." Now, remember, get yourself inside Thomas's head, or inside his skin. These are the darkest days of his life. Not about Doubting Thomas, we could say he's Despairing Thomas. On the Friday, his friend and master had been crucified. It was a public execution. And Jesus' dead body was taken down from the cross and laid in the tomb. And as that great stone was rolled across the mouth of the tomb, so all light was extinguished from Thomas's life. There wasn't an atom of hope. All hope lay in that tomb, cold and dead. There was no way out, no way back. No one, not Jesus' mother, not the disciples, the crowd, the soldiers, not Thomas himself, no one had any doubt that Jesus was dead. His body was cold, grey, lifeless, dead. Well, that was the Friday. And as we've seen, the women, they came to the tomb on the Sunday morning. And they found that the stone had been rolled away. And the tomb was empty, except for the grave clothes, which lay undisturbed. They hadn't been unwrapped. It was just that the body that had been inside them was gone. No sign of any disturbance, no violence, no robbery. Just that the body had vanished. Of course, we know the reason why, don't we? Jesus is risen. And before the day is out, he meets with his disciples. John 20, verse 19. Then the same day at evening, being the first day of the week, when the doors were shut, where the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood in the midst and said to them, "Peace be with you." And that word of reassurance is quickly followed by proof. Because maybe this isn't Jesus. Maybe this is just somebody who looks like Jesus. So verse 20, when he had said this, he showed them his hands and his side. His hands where they could see the print of the nails. His side where that Roman soldier had thrust the spear. So who else could this be but Jesus? He's not a ghost, not an apparition, a spectre. He's physical. He's flesh and bone. The marks left in his body on the Friday are still there. So, of course, there can be only one explanation. If Jesus is standing in front of them, very three-dimensional, with the wound prints, there's only one explanation. He is risen from the dead. And John tells us they were overjoyed when they saw it was the Lord. But, of course, Thomas isn't there. Now, grief is a strange thing. Some people grieve with others. Some people want to grieve alone. Maybe that was Thomas. Maybe that was why he wasn't there. We know Thomas really loved the Lord, didn't he? What he says about going to Bethany with the Lord, the fact he was willing to go with him and willing to die with him tells you the love this man has for Jesus. And now the man to whom Thomas is devoted is dead. So maybe when the others are there to meet with Jesus, as it were, Thomas had crept into a corner to grieve alone. Well, at last, maybe it's the Monday, the Tuesday, or when, we don't know, Thomas does meet with the others. And they have just one topic of conversation. They tell him in verse 25, "We have seen the Lord." And on and on and on they go. That's the sense of the Greek here. They keep saying to him, "We've seen the Lord." The only thing Thomas is sure of is that Jesus is dead. For him, that's the overwhelming reality. On and on and on and on they go, talking about the wound prints, and it was definitely him, and there's no doubt, we've seen the Lord, he's risen. On and on they go, until plain speaking, exasperated Thomas, he lays down his challenge, "Unless I see in his hands the print of the nails, and put my hand into the print of the nails, and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." You can say what you like, nobody's going to convince me. You can live in whatever world you like, but I'm Thomas, and my feet are firmly on the ground. I live in the real world, where dead men don't rise. "Unless I see, I will not believe." Those are my conditions. Obstinate, uncompromising, a rejection of their testimony. He's saying, he's Thomas, isn't he? "I need proof beyond all doubt." Doubting Thomas. Well, point number two is, is believing Thomas. Have you ever played leapfrog? One person crouches down, the next person leaps over them to land in front of them. I remember seeing someone leapfrog over a pillar box. Well, so far, Thomas has been behind the other disciples, hasn't he? If they say Jesus is risen, Thomas is saying Jesus is dead. But now he's going to leapfrog over them. And with one giant leap, doubting Thomas will be believing Thomas. In fact, he'll see further and more clearly than the other disciples. And from his lips will come the brightest and boldest confession of Jesus in all the Gospels. So what happens? Well, last Sunday, of course, Thomas wasn't there. It's been a miserable week. A miserable week. But now verse 26. We've now come to the next Sunday. Maybe John's trying to make a point, isn't he? It's the first Sunday when they saw the Lord. It's now the next Sunday, 8 days later. The disciples are together again. This time Thomas is there. Now the doors are shut. No one can get in except one. Verse 26, Jesus came, the doors being shut, and stood in the midst and said, "Peace to you." And Jesus has a special word for one disciple in particular. And he turns to Thomas, verse 27, "Reach your finger here and look at my hands, and reach your hand here and put it into my side. Do not be unbelieving, but believing." Jesus offers to Thomas the proof he's demanded. In fact, Jesus actually recites the challenge, doesn't he, that Thomas is thrown down. And you wonder, even as Jesus speaks those words, Thomas is thinking to himself, he's heard exactly what I've said. And as Thomas sees, everything changes. If he had been brought to despair by the overwhelming reality of Jesus' death, of the cross, well, now Thomas is overtaken by another overwhelming reality. That the Jesus who was dead, that same Jesus is risen. He's alive. He lives. And for Thomas, despair turns to joy. The skeptic believes, and from his mouth, that mouth which maybe once had been turned down at the sight, well, now you feel, don't you, that mouth is breaking into a smile and so much more. As he says, verse 28, he answers and says to Jesus, "My Lord and my God." And with those words, he leapfrogs ahead of the other disciples. His words are few, but they're full of glorious certainty. This is worship. The man who died lives. But it's more than that, isn't it? The man who died, the man who now lives, that man is divine. My Lord and my God. Hands that flung stars into space are now marked with the print of the nails. That voice that spoke worlds into being, now in that room, speaks directly to Thomas. Do not be unbelieving, but believing. Oh, my Lord and my God. And with those words, we arrive at the high point in John's Gospel. Who is this Jesus? Who is this man from Nazareth? Well, here is the crowning revelation. Who is this one? Who is this one we've been following through the Gospel? He is Lord. He is God. And that confession comes from the lips of the arch-skeptic. But he's now believing Thomas. That's sort of point number three. My friend, what's your verdict on Jesus? Now think of a clock, or think of a clock face. It's midnight, and therefore the hands of the clock are together. They're both pointing to the 12. When will they next meet at 12? Well, 12 hours later, at midday. So from midnight to midday, for 12 hours, those two hands, will make their separate journeys round the clock face to end up where they started, pointing at the 12. In a sense, that's a summary of John's gospel. John begins his gospel with both hands pointing to the 12. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. So the Word, the very expression of God, the Word who is face to face with God, the Word who is himself God, he became flesh. God the Son became a man without ceasing to be God. And Jesus is his name. Now that's John's starting point. The hands of the clock are pointing to the 12. And then for the next 20 chapters, the story unfolds. The hands, they make their separate ways around the clock face. And we discover who God is and what he is like. If this one is the Word, if he's the expression of God, if he is God made visible, we discover in 20 chapters what he is like. And now, here in chapter 20, with Thomas's confession, "My Lord and my God," the hands have returned again to the 12. We're back where we started. But so much has changed, because we now know who God is. And we know why he came. And of course, thinking about the clocks, the hands, they've moved, haven't they? From the midnight, we didn't know, we didn't see. They've now moved to the midday. We've moved from the darkness to the light. It's been a revelation. We're seeing something we hadn't seen before. And that's, in a sense, again, a summary of John's gospel. That's his theme. It's all about light and darkness. And it's a revelation. Jesus is the light. And the world into which he comes is in darkness. In him was life. And the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness. And the darkness did not comprehend it. There was a man sent from God, his name was John. This man came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. God is being revealed. Jesus is the light. So what happens when that light begins to shine? What happens as we go through our 20 chapters? Well, as the light shines, the darkness resists the light. When people meet Jesus, when people hear Jesus, when people witness the light, the overwhelming, the growing, the deepening impression you get is that people reject Jesus. They hate Jesus. So much so that when we come to chapters 18 and 19, as we've been looking at the Passion of Christ, it looks like the darkness has overcome the light. It looks like the light is extinguished. because they take Jesus and they nail him to a cross. He dies. He's buried. The light has been put out. It looks like the darkness has won. But is that the end of the light? Has the light been put out forever? Has the darkness triumphed in the end? No. Because when in chapter 20 the hands of the clock again meet at the 12, what do we find? Jesus bursts from the tomb. And at that resurrection, what are we discovering? The light triumphs magnificently, gloriously, wonderfully over the darkness. The world floods with the light of the resurrection. The mighty conqueror over sin and death and hell. He's risen. And with Thomas's confession, "My Lord and my God," we hear the clock chiming, ringing out, striking 12. And it's the midday. And that's where you come in. Because throughout his gospel, John's been asking you a question. What do you think about this Jesus? In fact, the gospel reads like a court case. It's posing the question, who is this one? Who is it? Is he God? Is this what God looks like? Is this the revelation of our Maker? Is this the hope of the world? Is this the Savior of mankind? Is this your Savior? Is this your hope? And John says, listen, I'll call the witnesses. I'll call John the Baptist. I'll call Moses. I'll call Christ himself. Let's look at his life. Let's look at his works. Let's hear his words. And I'll call the Father to bear witness. And of course, I'm John, and he's told us again and again, I'm an eyewitness to these things. And he prays the evidence before us. He says, look. Look at the evidence. Engage your mind. Think. Listen to the witnesses. What do they say? Look at the reaction of the darkness to the light. Just look at the sort of people who reject the light. Now, what do you say, says John? Are you with the light or are you with the darkness? And as it were, John saves his star witness to the end. There he is, dour, stubborn. You're not going to convince me. Unless I see in his hands the print of the nails and put my finger into the print of the nails and put my hand into his side, here it is, it's emphatic, isn't it? I will not believe. If Paul McCartney, well-known veggie, if he starts advertising pork pies, you know they must be good pork pies, mustn't they? What an endorsement. If the Swedish team turn around and say, well, of course, England were by far the better team, they play the better football, and they thoroughly deserve to win, you think, well, England, if you Swedes say it, England must have been the better team. What an endorsement. And if the dour, stubborn, sceptical Thomas, if the man who says, I will not believe, you can't convince me, I'm never, ever, ever, ever going to believe, and I'm going to lay down a ridiculous qualification, fingers going in the holes, fist in the side, unless you give me proof like that, I will not believe. If that man then turns round and says, he's risen. He's alive. I believe. Then you know, don't you, that if this witness speaks, the proof proof of Jesus' resurrection is incontrovertible. In fact, more than that, because it's not just an endorsement, is it, about the resurrection? If Thomas, who's been with this Jesus for 3 years, now worships him and says this Jesus is more than a man, he's Lord and God, and he's more than that, he's my Lord and my God, then you know if such a witness as Thomas confesses these things, then my friend, you know it's got to be true. John calls his final witness, reach your finger here, look at my hands, reach your hand here, put it into my side, do not be unbelieving, but believing. And Thomas answered and said to him, my Lord and my God. So hearing the evidence, what's your verdict? What do you think about Jesus? Are you with the darkness? Or are you with the light? Well, maybe you're thinking, oh, it's not a bad question to ask. Well, it's okay for Thomas, because Thomas can see Jesus. That's the whole point, isn't it? He can see Jesus, I can't see Jesus. So how can I be sure of something I haven't seen? Well, Jesus says you can be sure as Thomas was sure, without having seen. Because he says, verse 29, Thomas, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. So people who haven't seen can believe as Thomas believed. So how can I be certain of something I've never seen? Well, verse 30, John tells us, truly Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written, that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. God has given us this eyewitness record that is John's word, but it's more than John's word, it's God's word, breathed by God. God speaking to us in his own words, God giving a testimony, a sure testimony as to who Jesus is. So by reading this word, listening to this word, taking it seriously, God will meet with me. And so that I can be as sure as Thomas himself was sure. It's written here so that I too can come to know and love and follow Jesus. And for myself, know him as my Lord and my God. These are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. So what's your verdict? As we wrap things up, your default setting will be to reject Jesus. Jesus himself says that'll be your reaction. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. He who believes in him is not condemned, but he who does not believe is condemned already, because he has not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. And this is the condemnation, that light has come into the world, and men loved darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. Jesus, those are Jesus' own words, he says, your default setting will be to reject me, because we love darkness, because our deeds are evil. You know that, don't you? We do bad stuff. There's all sorts of corners in our life, and we don't want God shining his light into them. It's bad enough to know your parents have found out. We love darkness, which is why when the light shines, when people start to tell me about Jesus, when people start to talk to me about him, I don't want to know. There's pressure. I feel embarrassed. Somebody's cornered me. I want to get away. What did Jesus say? He who believes in him is not condemned, but he who does not believe is condemned already because he has not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. And this is the condemnation. This is why they're condemned, that light has come into the world and men love darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. Jesus is saying, if I avoid him, if I don't want to know, if I just go on as I have been going on all these years, then I condemn myself. And you begin to realize, don't you, in John's gospel, when you thought it was Jesus in the dock, and what do I think about him? It's actually me who's in the dock. And having done all this bad stuff, says Jesus, I'm condemned already. It's very startling, isn't it? It means I've already booked my place in hell. There's already a room reserved for me. But Jesus didn't come into this world to condemn. He came to save. He didn't come, as it were, to prolong my existence. He came to give us everlasting life. He didn't come to run us to ground like some Christians corner me and I feel like a trapped animal and I can't get away. He's come to draw us into the light. Now, of course, if you come to the light, what happens? You begin to realize how filthy you are, don't you? And so, my friend, you've got to do some owning up. You've got to own up to the person that you are. You've got to own up to the lies and the hatreds and the jealousies. You've got to own up to the way you use your computer or the way you've treated your friends or the way you spoke to your parents. You've got to say, well, that's me. That's exactly who I am. And I've got to come clean about my bitter thoughts and the gossip and the endless hours I've spent just wasting my life, filling my life with trash, trying to prove something. And I've gone up to the fact that I've never loved God. In fact, all I ever really talk about, all that ever really matters, is me. I've got to be honest. I've got to come to the light and see myself as I really am. And I come to Jesus and say, Lord, I am a sinner. It's exactly who I am. I have and I do bad stuff. I've only got one life and I've already messed it up. And what will Jesus do? Well, like he did with Thomas, he'll show you his wounds. He'll show you the marks of his cross. Because they tell you that the sins of countless people who've offended God, at the cross they were put to Jesus' account. So that when God came to punish those sins, it was Jesus who took the blame. He'll show you his wounds because those wounds tell their own story. They tell you the place where justice and mercy met, where sin was punished and the sinner is pardoned, where Jesus dies so that I might live, where the light overcomes the darkness, where God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Jesus points to his wounds. He points to the cross. And he says, do not be unbelieving, but believing. So will you come to the light? If you pretend that all this is nonsense or whatever, you're condemned already and you're in the darkness and you're lost. But if you come to the light, if you come to Jesus. This week a judge ruled that a 32-year-old anorexic who wants to die, he ruled that she should be force-fed to keep her alive. This is what he said. He said, one day she might come to realize she was a special person whose life is of value. She wants to throw her life away. She wants to starve to death. Leave me alone, let me die. But one day she might realize that she was a special person whose life is of value. That's the gospel. That's what the gospel says to you. If you stay in the darkness, you die. You're lost. You throw your life away. But Jesus says your life matters. It matters to me. It matters enough to go to a cross and bear in my body the wounds and the marks of the anger of God against sin. And this is the only time you've got. Yeah, it's a cliche, isn't it? Life isn't a rehearsal. This is it. So don't throw it away. Because when death comes, it will be too late. You'll be condemned already. Unless you turn to Jesus. So will you turn to him tonight? Lord, you died to save condemned sinners. Lord, save me. Will you come? Will you fall upon the kind arms of Jesus? Will you surrender to him, my Lord? Will you worship him, my God? And will you take heart from Jesus' reply to Thomas? Thomas, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed.